Good evening, everybody. How hot is everyone? Everybody ready to just kind of do this and have the heat break? Me too. I apologize in advance. It's not going to get any cooler in the next hour. I wish it would. It's probably going to get hotter, but my name, as Maury said, is Kathy Jacobs. Several of you know me. I'm here to talk social media trends. Before Bruce and I moved here to L.A. 3 years ago, I spent my life as a social media expert guru, whichever piece you want to put at it. I have over 4,000 Twitter followers. I have at least 2,000 on Facebook. I don't even know where else. Anywhere that you go on social media that you see the name Call Kathy, C-A-L-L-K-A-T-H-Y, all is one word, chances are about 75% that it's me. If it's not me, it's a realtor in Florida. And she and I get each other's stuff every once in a while. I have done social media since the early 2000s. I was on Twitter within a year of its founding. Clear back in the days when, as Bruce used to call it, Twitter was considered stalkmenow.com. Because all people did, it looked like, was go on and say, I ate this for breakfast. I went here. I did this. I did that. That's not what social media is anymore. What social media is now is a way for you to connect with people, with companies, and with information. And what we're going to talk about tonight is I'm going to start with a bunch of data about how social media has grown and how it's introduced itself into the mainstream. And then after that part, we'll take a break. And in the second half, we'll either do Q&A, or if there are specific things you want to see me do that I've talked about, I can go and do them. I specifically didn't put demo stuff into the first half of the presentation. Having lived 20 years of my life in Phoenix, I get paranoid this time of year with this much heat. I was about 50% certain we were going to lose electricity tonight, and I wasn't going to have an internet connection. So we'll use it later, but right now we're just going to talk. So what do you suppose the biggest trend in social media is? Anybody got any idea? What, photos, possibly? What information? Facebook and Google Plus? You're all kind of going around the center. The biggest trend in social media is more. More people putting more information up on the social web, using more applications and more devices in more different ways. Pictures used to be on Flickr and a few other places. Now, we're not even going to talk Flickr tonight. We're going to talk about two or three other places that people use to put pictures up on the web because Flickr has a problem. Flickr isn't very social. And the whole idea behind social media is social sharing. The ability to put what you want to put up there so that other people can see it, comment on it, and use it. In 2005, less than 10% of the adults in the U.S. who were on the internet even used a social media or social networking site. By 2009, 2010, somewhere right in there, we got to 50%. Now, all right, which button am I using? Whoops. I'm trying to find my laser pointer. I'll skip it. Now, as you can see clear to the right, by 2015, 75% of the adults in the U.S. who are on the internet use some form of social sharing or social media. That's a big jump in not a lot of time. In the same time frame, the internet graph, the graph of people using the internet, took a slightly lower curve. It was up about here now. For the internet, it's down about 10 degrees less, something like that. So let's look at where these people are going on the internet to use social media. And from now on through the rest of the presentation, when I say social media, I mean social media access through your computer, through your phone, through your car, through your watch, through your television. More apps in more ways. How many of you have a TV at home that is connected to the internet? Well, we're kind of halfway because we have a Roku. Okay? How many of you have a phone that's connected to the internet? Yeah, lots more. If someone had told you 5 years ago that your TV or your phone was going to be able to be used on the internet in a regular manner, meaning regular times of when you're doing it, would you believe them? Would you have believed a decade ago that TV series that start on TV come with what's called a hashtag? And yet today, we don't see any TV programs that start without a hashtag, a tag that says, use this if you want to comment to us, a Twitter name, a Facebook name, possibly an Instagram name, all kinds of other ones. Because businesses have learned what people are starting to learn more and more. The advantage to being on social media isn't just that your stuff is out there. It's that everybody else's stuff is out there. You can find what you're looking for almost always on some social media site. So, as of earlier this month, the social networks worldwide are the ones I'm about to show you. The numbers you're going to see at the end of each one are the number of active users in millions. Anybody want to guess what the very first line is going to be? Facebook. No question. 1,490 million. Anybody want to put that in a regular number? More than China, more than India. I mean, that's kind of scary. Facebook didn't exist that long ago, and now... And that doesn't count the people who use Facebook Messenger. If you send a direct message to someone on Facebook, chances are they're not going to get it in Facebook anymore. They're going to get it in a Facebook application program called Facebook Messenger. It runs on your phone, it runs on your computer, it ties in with Skype, runs all over the place. 700 million active users just for Facebook Messenger. No, this is worldwide. And that's a very important point. I've been waiting for someone to ask that. Yeah, this is worldwide, but realize that in some parts of the world, Facebook isn't what they use. I cut this graph down to pull it into separate pieces, because one of the top ones on here is an application called QQ. Anybody heard of QQ? It was actually in the news this summer for a little bit. No, it's not 4Q. QQ is the Chinese social media program. Chinese. And QQ has been bigger than Facebook historically. The Chinese are starting to use more Facebook, so it's starting to balance out. If I had put QQ up here, it actually sits right between Facebook and Facebook Messenger right now. Facebook is 1,490 million. 1.4 billion. You forgot to put your phone in the mode. Okay? The next biggest one is Twitter. So 300 million daily users worldwide of Twitter. Come on. Move. Thank you. 300 million Skype users. How many of you have ever used Skype? Do you ever think of it as social media? It is social media. And Microsoft, when Microsoft bought Skype, they bought it specifically because they wanted a social media communication system they didn't have to build themselves. And they, in the process of buying Skype, got all of us in our Skype IDs. Plus, right about that same range, right about 300 million. Anybody know what Google Plus is? I'm going to pick on something else, Adam. Go ahead, what's Google Plus? It's like a Facebook that's built by Google. That's really the best thing. Google, it was Google's attempt to break Facebook. Instagram. Now, here's the difference between Instagram and these other ones. Instagram's only been around 2-3 years, 4 years at the most, and it's already up at 300 million active users. What does that tell you is going to happen in the future with Instagram? Up and up and up. Instagram is one of the big social media trends we're going to talk about later on, because Instagram is for pictures, a little bit for videos. Very good question. Why do we need the others when we already have Facebook? First off, because everybody who wants to make their millions believes they have the startup idea that everyone will want to use. And so they're going to bring the data into their system. Data is power. Secondarily, Facebook data and Facebook applications only run in Facebook. Nobody else can easily get that data. You've got to write a pretty hefty piece of programming to get data out using the Facebook API. But Twitter's API is easy to use. An API is an application program interface, a way to say, Twitter, give me these things. Twitter, give me these things. So Twitter lets you do texting or text equivalent stuff, whereas Facebook is more, here's what I want to show the people who are my friends. Does that make sense? They are part of the Internet, and they are a big reason. He doesn't understand what they do that the Internet doesn't do. And actually, that's a very good question, because the Internet kind of is becoming everybody's, that's web pages, but in reality, the Internet is anything that goes over the wire from the cloud to someone personally, via phone, computer, whatever. When you're talking to the Internet, or as some people call it, the interwebs, what? It's not personal. It's going out to everybody in a different way. What these different apps do is give you different ways to put targeted information out to different populations. How many of you ever visited a Tumblr page? Tumblr is an old blogging engine. It kind of lost steam as a blog and became a way for people to share silly things on the Internet. What's the silliest thing you've looked at in the last week on Tumblr? Because I know you don't look at anything serious, right? Pick something. A math blog. Ooh, I'm impressed. Somebody who actually uses one of the good Tumblr ones. Now, is it one of the math humor blogs, or is it one of the math problem-solving blogs? What? Teaches. A blog is an online journal. It's a place for you to put information for other people to read. No, it's your own website, or you're a subset of somebody else's website. But it is, again, outside of Facebook. Facebook would love it all to be inside of Facebook. The more stuff that's inside of Facebook, the more clicks they get, the more traffic they get, the more they can charge for their ads. A blog is what you or some company puts out there as information. Yeah. Blogs have been around. Let's see. We took our first site from website to blog in about 2004. And we weren't the earliest ones. I know people who have had blogs going and being actively posted to since 2002. Blog BBSs were really pre-internet, and that was a bulletin board service, and that was where you would just go and chat with people and share information. Those are kind of what led to the ideas that became websites and blogs and became some of these apps. Or if back in the AOL days or the Prodigy days, you used to read those series of articles that somebody put up on a specific topic, those generally became blogs. And to tell you how far blogs are falling down on the list, I'm not even talking content on blogs tonight. They're still used, there's still a ton of traffic on it, there's still a ton of stuff, but they're not part of the social web, they're part of a content web. And there's a difference between those two. They're down about here. Meetup and dating sites have a much smaller audience, and I had to cut off somewhere on my list, so I didn't get down to either, but I do have a couple of social event sites that I can give information on in the end if we have time. I had to cut the numbers somewhere because if I'd gone for every single one, we'd be here for the next 6 weeks. Anybody? Anyone over the age of 22 heard of Snapchat? Okay. Snapchat started as share a picture of yourself and we'll get rid of it in 24 hours. Now it's share a picture or a video of yourself. It still goes away about after 24 hours, but it's a lot more than it used to be. And we will actually be talking that because Snapchat is one of the upcoming trends. Our old friend LinkedIn, bottom of this list. How many of you have a LinkedIn profile? LinkedIn is business profiles. What have you done? What's your resume? LinkedIn keeps trying to break into the social network, the social media world. They let you share updates now. They let you like other people's updates. They let you like when people have anniversaries and such. But they're still so far, they've fallen so far down on the list that most people graduating from college last year did not create a LinkedIn profile. This is the first time in like a decade since LinkedIn had started. Two very good questions. The people who do startups want to find what is called a unicorn in the tech world. A unicorn is that once-in-a-million rare application that everybody starts using and can't live without. Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, they are unicorns. Everybody else builds applications hoping that they're going to go big and stay big. Most of the social networks don't cost you anything dollar-wise to join. In exchange for joining, you're giving them data, and you're seeing the ads that people pay them to place there. And you need to know, Facebook does make money. Twitter is pretty darn close to making money. I think that they finally did get above their original IPO number, but I'm not positive. I couldn't find a number when I was searching today. You know, Elliot? The idea behind every tech person's dream is that whatever they're going to build on an app is going to get so much data that every corporation wants to pay to use their API. And they're doing it all on the backs of us, which is good and bad. And we will talk a little bit about some of the security issues in a little bit. This chart was really interesting to me. By the way, all the data I'm showing you tonight is not stuff I have pulled together personally. I've pulled data from Statista, STATISA.com, and from, this one comes from a number of different places. A friend of mine let me use it. And from a couple of sites that specialize on gathering data on social media. The biggest one is called DMR. This shows you for five of the biggest, most well-known social media apps, who uses them. What? Younger people. Yes. Except, notice that Facebook number? The 24 spike out there? The only reason the ones below that aren't out that far is because people are aging into it, and they've already counted them. For a good 5 years, the largest growing population on Facebook and the largest growing population on Pinterest were women over the age of 50. Because it's a great way to stay connected with people. Did I spell that right? Thank you. So let's talk security a little bit. Go ahead. Pinterest, I'm going to talk about it in a little bit. It's an online pinboard, where you stick images and talk about them, and people talk about them. And we'll talk about that a little bit later, because it's one of the things that started to die, and then it came back in the image world. I have a few words for you about security. What? There is none. That's bullet point number one. That didn't even make it on the slide. If you are sharing information on the web, don't put something out there you wouldn't have told your grandmother or you wouldn't tell your grandchildren. Isn't that what Snapchat is all about? That's how it started. And then somebody at Snapchat went up to the boss and said, you know, we could monetize this if we started getting brands using it. And now brands use Snapchat to sell on a regular basis information. There are a large and growing number of companies and number of TV stations who have their own Snapchat channel. And you can go on that channel anytime during the day and see what they've posted in the last 24 hours. Anything from short videos to images of text. That was not the intended plan. It was originally intended to be sharing that nobody would want kept. Now, Snapchat as a corporation has a big problem. Because their whole business plan is based on everything goes away after 24 hours. What's the problem with that with security and businesses? Businesses don't want it to go away after 24 hours. If they put something up there, they want it to stay. Okay, so that's two of the big points. His question is, I thought that I read that Snapchat, if you send somebody a video, it'll disappear in a few seconds. If you send a direct Snapchat from one person to another person, it will disappear from their feed in a few minutes, and it will be purged off of the servers in 24 hours. However, last spring, they expanded to a setup where you can send more public, non-X-rated Snapchats. And they go out, and anyone on the public who has a Snapchat account can see them, and they stay for 24 hours. And believe me, for the people who work at Snapchat, that was a huge change. However, it's been very good for them. They've doubled in the number of employees this year because they need that much more support. Another big security point, in fact, this is the biggest one, when you create a new account, it used to be that every new account on any application asked for your email, you got to tell them what you wanted your username to be, and then they hooked it all together. Now when you create a new account, and this has been growing more and more over the last 2 years for the first part up here, and over the last year for the second part, they will ask you to do one of two things. First, they will ask if you want to sign in with your credentials from another application. So, for example, you could sign in with your LinkedIn credentials, you could sign in with your Facebook credentials, you could sign in with your Twitter credentials. It gives them a way to know whether you're real or not, and it breaks that boundary of, okay, they've got stuff out here, they must be at least somewhat real. Many applications are going further and doing something called two-factor sign-in. Two-factor is the idea that when you create an account, you give them your phone number, and they send you a text message with a code. And you put that code in, just like they used to do with emails. Thing is, now if you can't get that code off your phone, they won't give you access to the account. They know that your email can be spoofed. Phones, text messages aren't quite as likely to be spoofed yet. I strongly recommend if you can set up two-factor security for your Microsoft account, for your Facebook account, and for the other big accounts, do it. The question is, how often do I have to do that? How secure is it? Do I have to use the two-factor every time? The answer is no. As long as you're using the same credentials, you don't have to go through the two-factor. But if you forget your password, in order to create a new password, they're going to make you do two-factor. How secure is it? I would say it's about three times as secure as sending you an email to get it set. That's my rough guess. It's more secure than single. It's much more. Because now someone has to not only know who you are, you know all those questions they ask? Answer this question to get access? Okay. I can guess that a third of you in this room have the answer spot for what was one of your pet's names. They're too easy to guess. They were good at the time. Two-factor makes it even harder for the people to get in. It also, if you're doing two-factor, they're not getting any other information from you. They're not getting your mother's maiden name. They're not getting where you were born. So it makes it harder for them to take that information and steal your identity. They ask other questions via different emails. Yes. But if someone has got your emails, and it's much easier to get your email address and grab that information than it is to grab your phone. If they've got your email address, they can get all of those questions and get all the answers. It's much harder to get your phone and get the information off of a text message off of your phone. After all, how many of you have your phones with you tonight? And how many of you would really worry if you didn't know where your phone was? Probably about the same number of hands. How many of you would worry if you didn't know, if you couldn't get to your email for a day or two? Nah. A few, but not many. I do, but that's because I'm a social media junkie. So before we move on to Facebook trends, anybody got any questions on what I've put forth up to here? Going once, going twice, let's talk Facebook. The number one trend in Facebook is more, just like it was for everything here. However, this is an interesting progression. This is out of Statista. I don't know how to pronounce that, I'm sorry. In 2008, in quarter three, Facebook had 125 million active users. Okay, that's worldwide. They went over 1 billion in quarter three of 2012. Now, it's quarter two of 2015, and that number's already up at 1.5 billion. Do you notice the trend? Do you think Facebook likes this trend? More of our information they've got, the more they can tie us to using Facebook for everything, the more data they have. Now, I live a transparent life. Everything about me just about is on the web, or especially on Facebook and Twitter. You want to know something about me? You can find it out. That's not the case for everybody. If that's not your preferred way to live, then you really want to be careful about what you use Facebook to do. I want to take a second here to tell a personal story. Bruce and I have between us, had between us, four parents as of earlier this summer. My mother, my stepmother, his mother, my father. Out of that foursome, his mother is not on social media, but his brothers are. My father is not on social media. My stepmother was on social media. And my mother was on social media. End of the summer comes, my mother falls. And she has to get sent to the hospital. I was telling Irma this earlier. One of the ways we knew something was wrong is because my mother stopped posting on Facebook. My older sister lives in the same town, but she wasn't at that point really good about checking in with my mother or telling me. So we get to the end of 10 days where I haven't heard anything from my mother. We know we're going to call my sister when we get home that evening. Before we can call her, she calls us to say, Mama's in the hospital. They don't know what all's wrong. I knew what was going on because of her social media habits. And she didn't post that much. She liked things that my sisters and I posted. She liked things that some of mutual friends posted. She posted every 6 months or something of her own. She will never be back on her own computer because she will not be back in her own house ever again. Didn't realize how much that was going to hurt, how much I was going to miss that little bit of communication until I started going through it. The other woman involved is my stepmother. She was a fairly frequent poster on Facebook. And her sister, her daughters, who are my stepsisters, were also fairly frequent posters on Facebook. She's had cancer 3 times. And about a month and a half ago, she went into the hospital. And her daughters posted on Facebook and added me, "You need to talk to your dad." The day my stepmother died, my dad called us. I told him, "You need to talk to my sister, you need to call her." Before he could even get my sister called, my younger sister, the stepsisters had posted it, and my sister found out. Which was actually okay because the six daughters are close enough in age and such that we know each other. But that's how fast things move on the internet. Can't you do that on email? Sure. You can send an email to everybody. Okay. In this same time frame, one of my best friends from college died. Yeah, I've had a really crappy September and October. She had 750 friends on Facebook. There was no way her sister was going to write 750 emails to tell them, "We thought Anne was getting better. She died this morning." Facebook allowed her to post that with the note, "Please share with the other alums and the other friends who don't follow me." And because we were able to do that, her network knew quickly and were able to support her sisters, her husband, her son, and be there for them emotionally and some of them physically at the funeral. Who, if they hadn't found out through social media, wouldn't have found out until after the obituary was posted in the old world. I don't know. Maybe that's just me and my generation that's important. But that was really massive to me. It meant that even though we hadn't talked personally all summer, I still knew what was going on. I don't know. I'm not everybody. This is just my story. So let's talk a little bit about Facebook. It's Facebook. How many of you have been talking to someone about something on Facebook and heard them go, "I can't find blah, blah, blah. Where did they hide the events? I can't get to your profile anymore." Facebook is well known for changing things every time Zuckerberg changes his mind. Some of it's good, some of it's not so good. The good changes this year, you now have an option on any of your friends' profiles that you can go and click on a button to say, see first. You can set up to 30 people and pages on your see first list. I use this list for two things. One, I use it for family. And two, I use it for people who don't post very often. Because if they're on see first, when I go look at my wall, I will see their stuff ahead of other things that are posted at the same time. So, for example, Cheryl back there is a very good friend of ours. And when she posts about the kids, because she's on my see first list, I know it. When my sisters post, I know it. I went to go add the group as one of my see firsts, and I don't have enough spaces. I wanted to. I really did. Of those of you who've been on Facebook in, say, the last 6 months, how many of you have seen those little posts that say, so-and-so did this a year ago, or posted this picture a year ago, or a year ago was getting married? Those are called timeline memories. And in the last year, Facebook has cleaned up how memories work. You can now go to facebook.com/onthisday when you're logged into Facebook, and you can see the things that you've done on this day over the past year since you've been a Facebook member. And if you want to share them, you can share them. This is really good for those men in the audience who don't have internal memory. Who do you suppose I'm talking about? He can go to On This Memory and see, oops, I was supposed to do something for her today. No one ever forgets anniversaries in this room, right? You all are just perfect. Easier security access. If you had to set up your security on Facebook 9 months ago, you had to go in and know what you were doing in every piece of every area, and you had to set each event one way, and your friends posts one way, and who could see what you shared one way. They have conglomerated it all into one workflow that you can go in by going to the upper right-hand corner and clicking on the lock and say, review my security settings, and it's a three-step process to set your security. Set who can see what you post and who can see when you post. It's much nicer than it used to be. Believe me. The other thing has just come out in the last few weeks, and I'm guessing that almost nobody knows about this because I was shocked when it was added. If you go to share something on Facebook now, when you click share, you get a drop-down. You can share immediately, you can share ... or you can share with. It used to be that when you shared something, it automatically got shared on your time frame with the same settings and nobody could change anything. Now, you can share immediately and still share it with your default settings, or you can share with and share it directly with a group, directly with a person, directly with a page. That means if I want to share something so that only certain people can see it, I can share it with just them by using share with. I can also set my own personal set of priorities of security of who can see who's tagged in this post. Very good, sir. So if I share something with someone else, what's to stop them from sharing it? If you use share with, you determine who can see it. The default is friends of friends. So if they reshare it, their friends can see it. But you can change it to just friends. And then if they're not a friend of yours, they can't share it. When they go to hit that share button, they're not going to have any sharing options. Yes, the share button is grayed out. You also have seen this if you go to somebody's post and all of a sudden when you go to share it, it says this content is no longer available. That's another way Facebook is telling you you can't share it. Yes, everybody's back there doing this. This was a big thing for Facebook to give the rest of us. They didn't want to give it to us. And they battled and battled to keep from giving it to anyone. And then somebody shared one of Zuckerberg's posts about a surprise party he was giving for his wife with the public. 3 days later, we had share with. There are power. There is power in numbers. Yes. The question is, he just joined Facebook, and when he joined Facebook, all of a sudden, he got notified every day that these people are having a birthday. Facebook knows that we really are social creatures, and it's really fun to wish someone a happy birthday. So as soon as you are following people in Facebook, or friends with people on Facebook, Facebook will tell you their birthday, if it's public. Personally, I keep my month and day public, and the year only me. I don't care if you really know, but that's a security issue for me. If you know my year of birth, you can hack into some systems. But if you know just month and day, you can't. And that's why you got all those notifications. Remember, Facebook wants you to do things inside of Facebook. If you see people's birthdays, that's an automatic. I don't have to spend 25 cents to send a card, 42 cents to send a card. Whatever it is nowadays, I can do it online. And I gotta admit, I'm one of those terrible people who do send happy birthday notices to just about everybody. And that's okay. There are friends that I use that to see whether I'm gonna keep in touch with them for the rest of the year. Yep. If it's you're celebrating like your 50th anniversary, why would you want to publish it on Facebook? Is everyone going to know, everyone you would want to know, going to be invited to that party? Oh, why shouldn't they know my year of birth? They don't know my year of birth because there's too many companies out there still that use that as a security question. What year were you born? And if somebody can get that publicly from Facebook, they're a step closer to hacking my identity. I don't care if they know how old I am. If they want to go through the posts and see how old somebody says I am or which anniversary it is, hey, that much effort, go for it, I don't mind. I just don't want it to be public to the average person who doesn't have to look for it. Now, this is Facebook. There are some not-so-good things. This first one I mentioned last month? God, my brain is fuzzy. I don't know. Last month, the month before. Most popular versus most recent. When you look at your Facebook wall, that's where you see everybody else's posts and comments, Facebook wants you to see it in most popular or top stories. Because the more interaction the stories got, the more people have looked at it, the more ads they've put in front of somebody's eye. I don't know about you guys, but I usually want to see what's most recent. I want to see who just posted something. I want to know what's going on. Yeah, every once or twice a week I'll go and look at what's top posts, but generally I keep it in most recent. Facebook is moving more and more towards making top post the permanent default. The way you fix it is you get an application called Social Fixer. It's all one word, socialfixer.com, and it'll help you set up Facebook in a way that makes it easier to use and set it up so that you're always on most recent. The second change was actually made about 18 months ago, but it's only come into being as an important trend since they launched Facebook Messenger. When someone sends you a person-to-person message on Facebook, you get it in Facebook Messenger if on your phone, or you get it in the Facebook Messages area if you're on the web. But not everything goes to your messages. You define who can actually send you a direct message. And if you have someone who wants to send you a direct message but isn't connected to you in a way that you've said is okay to send you messages, they'll go into a tab called Other Messages. That's pretty good. I don't have to go look at other messages very often because I don't care about most of those people. The kicker here is that if someone is contacting you who hasn't friended you, but you have mutual friends, and they want to DM you to tell you why they want to get connected, their message is going to go to other messages, which isn't great. So if, for example, someone was a friend of Bruce's, and they wanted to become a friend of mine so we could talk about another subject, or talk about him, and they sent me a direct message, it's going to go to other messages, not to my main messages. And other messages never go to Facebook Messenger. So every once in a while, go in and look at it from Facebook itself. The next one is the bane of any social media expert's life. Anything in Facebook is guaranteed to move without notice and as soon as you are ready to start training about it. It doesn't matter how picky it is or what it is, it will move from one menu to another menu. Because Zuckerberg likes to change and likes to fail frequently rather than letting everybody find where things are going and leave them there. Can you tell I'm not a fan of that idea? If you put something somewhere, leave it there or tell me you moved it. Don't move security 3 times in a week. Do I need to say anything more about ads? There's more of them. They're getting bigger. They're showing up in the middle of your wall now. And every once in a while, Facebook will start asking you this little box over to the side that says, "Would you be willing to take a survey about what you see on your wall?" Don't take those damn surveys. They're going to show you 2 ads and tell you which one do you want to know more. They're not going to show you real posts from your friends. I made that mistake once. I will never do it again. Any questions on Facebook stuff? Okay. Any questions on Facebook? Okay. Let me show the growth on Twitter, and then we'll get to your question. Okay? Twitter is 140 text characters or a link to an image or a website shared out to your Twitter followers. As Bruce says, used to call it stalkmenow.com. It's anything you want to share that somebody else might be interested in. And look at that graph. In quarter one of 2010, there were 30 million Twitter users. Quarter one of 2013, 200 million. End of quarter two, 2015, 300 million. Anybody want to do the math and extrapolate to how soon they're going to hit 1 billion users? It's starting to flatten out a little bit. I'm really hoping it stays flattened out because Twitter has this built-in thing that they built in clear back here and before even 2010. You can only follow so many people. And it's based off of, once you get into the large numbers of followings and followers, it's based off of how many people follow you. And if those two numbers are too close, you can't follow more people. That number is about 2,000. Which wasn't bad back in the day when there were only 30 million people on the system. Now when there's 300 million people on the system, only being able to follow 2,000 people cuts you out of an awful lot. You have to start making decisions of what you're going to access, who you're going to follow, who you're going to pay attention to. Your question, ma'am. Yes. Okay. That's fine. I can tell you how to get there. Yep. Okay, so the question is, she watches the news program, and at the end they say, follow us on Twitter for more information on this story. You can always see information on Twitter by going to twitter.com/whatever the Twitter handle is. And you can see what that person has published. Twitter would like you to always have to sign in to see that information. They haven't gotten there yet. You can still go just to the name. Here's what that 2,000 is. If your numbers are too close to each other, they will cut you back to following only a certain number of people, unless you're authorized. Any public person that you know of that's on Twitter has a verified Twitter account, which means Twitter has gone through and made sure that the person posting these tweets is really the person it says it is. And then those people, once you've been verified, you can have as many followers and follow as many people as you want. Right. Taylor Swift can have a zillion. Obama can have a zillion. Trump, unfortunately, can have a zillion. Sorry, that's my personal opinion. Biden can have a zillion. Anybody can have a ton of them once you're verified. I've never bothered to go get verified because I'm just not that important. I mean, people say I am to them, but I don't want to go through the hassle. When I finish this slide, can we do a timeout? So, does that answer your question? Does that answer your question? If you want to join Twitter, when you go to twitter.com, it'll ask you if you want to join. All you do is fill in the form, do the two-party authorization, give yourself a handle, and you've got a Twitter account. You don't ever have to follow anybody or have anybody follow you or even tweet. But sometimes, if your name is unique, it's a good thing to have the account. So the verified users has increased. In the last year, they have almost doubled. The second good feature that Twitter has announced is called Moments. And this has been in the news recently, because Moments is Twitter's way of gathering up tweets from all kinds of people about a particular subject and showing them on a specific tab in your Twitter profile. So you can see the news, you can see the sports information, you can see the entertainment information without going through the news sites. Why do you suppose Twitter wants to do that? They get to put ads on those pages. And if you've got a Twitter Moments page that you're looking at, chances are you're going to look at the ad. There's better integration. The Twitter API has always been a good API, and with a couple of recent change of recent situations, Twitter's API is easy to use, and they leave you access to a good bit of the data that's on Twitter and the data that's coming through Twitter. Their API earlier this year got even easier to use. Facebook's got harder. And we'll talk about this after the break and such, but there's better instant and looped video options. Twitter has actually developed tools to allow you to post looped videos through Vine and instant videos through Periscope. It's 8:05. I would like to suggest we take a 10-minute break, and then we'll move on after that to image sharing trends. And if you have any questions, come and see me during the halftime, and I'll do them. The next thing we're going to talk about is image sharing. There were a few questions during the break. I've answered most of them for people. A couple people have been tasked to remind me of something. However, I've been asked about networks we're not going to talk about. Google+, Neighborhood, WhatsApp, all kinds of other things. I could talk for 5 days straight, 5 8-hour days straight, my body would never survive it, and never talk more than an hour about the same app twice. I could cut that back to 30-minute presentations across 5 8-hour days, and I still would have things I had not touched. I had to cut it somewhere, and as it is, the list that I gave you guys that I said I was going to talk about is much longer than what I'm really actually talking about. I just kind of merged it together, and I apologize for that. On the other hand, if anybody wants to talk about another social network, I would bet Maurice would love to put you on the schedule. Is that correct? All right, so let's talk image sharing. This is the one that blew my mind. Phones today take pictures. Okay. Phones today take 14 to 20 megapixel pictures. Who would ever imagine that? Who's got an iPhone? How big are the pictures your iPhone takes? Huge pictures. So if you're taking all these huge pictures, how is it that everybody wants to share them? Well, what happens when you share your picture from your phone? It gets shared to a social sharing app, like Twitter, like Flickr, like Snapchat, like Instagram. And the original goes up on the server, but anybody else who's looking at it through a browser or through their phone gets a completely downsized version of it. So they don't get all the data unless they start zooming in and ask for it. But you can still get out all that original data. Make sense? Now, I had to be really careful with this section because I are a photographer. I have been known to take 10 rolls of pictures with a 35mm camera in a day. So there are very few picture apps out there that I don't know about. So I restrained myself to two of them. Pinterest and Instagram. The reason I picked these two is because these are the two that allow you to share your images in ways that other people can see them and use them. Pinterest is, if you think about a pin board, like you have one of the pin boards in a classroom, and you stick a pin through a picture and you stick it on the board, that's Pinterest. Each person has a number of boards. Each board has a number of pins. As a user on Pinterest, you can have as many boards and as many pins as you want. Oh, thank you. So, right now, well, as of this summer, Pinterest has 100 million users. They never expected that. When they are an accidental unicorn. Everybody remember when I defined unicorn earlier? They did not expect to go big. They built their app to get bought. They wanted to make their millions by building an app that a few people would want and somebody would want to buy. Within a year, they had 3 million users. And they've only been around 4 years, I think, 4 or 5 years. And they're now at 100 million. They're no longer looking to get sold because they've added advertising. And they also have added a feature whereby brands can get charged for their boards. And so brands pay for their boards, and that helps pay for Pinterest, and we as users can use it for free. 30% of U.S. social media users use Pinterest. They use it to pin everything from images to text to information graphics to cat videos. What is their capacity going forward? Well, they now own a server farm. So their capacity is how big do they want to store it? How much data do they want to pay to store? Pinterest is also, once your data is up on Pinterest, it is there permanently until you take it down. Which means if you were to go look at Call Kathy on Pinterest, you'd see a board from a few years ago titled Things We Want to Sell. All that stuff's been sold. I don't own any of it anymore. Pinterest has 500 billion pins on 1 billion boards. And we're going to look at one specific thing. They have 1.7 billion recipe pins. So there are 1.7 times somebody has put something on a Pinterest board that is a recipe, either an image of a card or an image of a food and then the text contains the recipe or anything else. If you need an idea for something to do for dinner, go to Pinterest, type in recipe and your main ingredient in the search part, and it'll give you a list of recipe cards spread all over the web. I don't know, I find it useful. Teachers use this for sharing information with their parents because you can make a Pinterest board public or private. Keep reminding me. I'm trying not to stand totally in front of the fan because you guys deserve some of it. If you make a private board, you can say, I'm only going to share it with these people. So if a teacher makes a private Pinterest board, shares it with her students' parents, she can pin good pieces of work or good pictures or whatever up on that board, and the parents can see what's going on. Parents don't have to wait till parent-teacher conferences. They can see it as soon as it's up there. Another way that Pinterest gets used a lot is people who have what's called an infographic. This is those pictures that you see where it's an image with text or with data over top of it. It's not a chart, but it's just some way of looking at the data in a different version. And people share those all the time. Pithy sayings are probably only second to recipe cards as the most common type of cards. We have a friend who has a private pin board for all the things she wanted for her new apartment. She invited a few of us so we could say, yeah, I've got that. I'm done with it. You want it. Oh, you need that? I know it's on sale over here. She moved into her apartment and she had 3/4 of what she needed, and she didn't have anything before she moved into the apartment. She'd moved out here with nothing. The second thing we're going to talk about is Instagram. And this is going to be a very high-level conversation about Instagram. Because most people use Instagram from their phones. You take a picture, you use the Instagram app to send it to Instagram, and it gets shared either publicly or privately, and you decide that based on your Instagram settings. And then everybody can see the pictures you've taken. For example, if you're on vacation and you're taking a ton of pictures on your vacation using your phone, you can upload them every night or constantly to Instagram, and everybody else can see your vacation in real time. What determines the resolution for Instagram? What is sent up is what your phone takes. So when you look at your Instagram account on the web, you can see it in full resolution. What comes down is dependent on the people's data plan. Usually it's sized to fit on your screen times 2. When you share, do you share with everyone, with friends, or what? You decide. On Instagram, you can set a default, this is what everything is going to go unless I change it, and then you can make a particular picture shared more to more people or to less people. It's one of the reasons I really like it over a lot of the other image sharing apps. Instagram has 77.6 million users as of earlier this summer. Doesn't seem like a lot, but they're less than 2 years old. They used to be, for the first year, they were only iPhone. They've only had an Android app for about a year. So you know that as more Android people use it, it's going to go up. When you post a picture, people looking at your thread on their phones or on the web can click the heart button for I like it, the broken heart button for I don't like it, or they can put a comment on there. Nearly half of the comments on Instagram pictures as of earlier this summer contained an emoji. And from looking at the data I was gathering, probably close to half of those only contain an emoji. What's an emoji? A smiley face, a heart, those little things you make with keyboard characters, a frown, a birthday cake. There's so many of them. 70 million photos are posted daily on Instagram. Heck, even I can handle that. The only problem is my phone won't stay active for long enough for me to do that. When you share it, how does it determine who can see it? If you share it publicly, anybody who has access to Instagram can see it. If you share it, friends, anyone you have actually friended on Instagram can see it. You decide who can see it by who you agree to be friends with. And friending on Instagram is one way. You can friend me without me friending you. If I don't friend you, you can only see my public stuff. Where is this data coming from? Some of it about the servers they own and such is from my own knowledge and my research. Most of the actual data comes from DMR. And this is a good end to that. Tomorrow morning I will be posting these slides up on slideshare.com. And I will make sure to put the links for where I got most of the data from in with the link to the presentation materials. I'm not about to go dig out all of this data myself. I'll let someone else do that work. Do the people who use this do it daily? Do they have day jobs? Yes, most of them have day jobs. I'll be honest. I use Instagram
but I only use it in a few cases. When something has happened in our world that I want to get the picture out quick, or when I'm on vacation. Or if somebody's visiting, things like that. I have friends who send out images 6, 10, 12 times a day. And I have the same question you are. Don't you work for a living? Yes, most people are not on everything. They're on 2 or 3 applications. If someone does things mostly from their phone, chances are they're using Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. But they're not using all 3 of them all the time. The only reason it looks like they're using all 3 of them all the time is because when you post to Instagram, you can say, send this to Facebook, send this to Twitter. Make sense? And yes, there are people out there who way overshare, even compared to what I do. Yes. Is there a way within Instagram to create albums? Yes. You can create albums, and you can add a picture to an album very easily. You just say, when you're getting ready to share it, save it as an album, and go. One of the other things Instagram is used for a lot is filtered pictures. There's a hashtag called #NoFilter. Don't believe it. #NoFilter. If you post that with an Instagram picture, it's supposed to mean you didn't do anything to the picture before you posted it. That is not a true statement in most of the cases. Most everybody uses some kind of filter. And Instagram's filters are insane. You can do anything from sepia tone to making it look like a Polaroid, to making it look like a stained glass, to any filter that you can have in Photoshop, you probably have in Snapchat. Or not in Snapchat, in Instagram. How do they handle salacious material? Very badly sometimes. You're supposed to self-monitor. And if you're sharing something that is not safe for work or not safe for children, your account has to be marked as not safe for work or not safe for children. If it's not, they can kick you off. And they will. Now, yes, you could go make another account, but anything that was in that account is gone. They do have ways you can say things and say not safe for work. But what's not safe for work to one person may be safe to work for another person. One of the other big things both Pinterest and Instagram are used for is fashion photography. Because they can quickly send it out there and say, which of these looks do you like better? Do you think I should do this in another color? Should I change the hemline? And they get instant feedback. Yeah, that's a little more than I would do. Okay, before we move to video, any other questions on this part? A lot of what? Yeah, that's the people who aren't tagging them. And if you go to the link on Instagram for one of those, you can actually report it. Yep, you can report them. The question was, she has a friend who goes on web, does an Instagram search for a specific picture and gets a bunch of nudes instead of what she was expecting. When that happens, you can sit there and just report every single one of them. And while Facebook's not real good about cleaning up their messes, Instagram and Pinterest are very good about cleaning things up. Mostly because the people who founded both of those two companies have kids. Whereas Zuckerberg never has kids, and let's hope he never does. I'm sorry, Zuckerberg is to me the typical... No! Worse than that. He's the typical boy who went to college for a few months and decided he could do better and he knew more than his professors. He never needed to read another literature book. He never needed to know anything about the arts. He knows how to code and he knows the right answers for all of us. He doesn't know the right answers for me. And I have friends who have told him that to his face and who are still good friends with him because he wants to hear that. He just doesn't do anything about it. So let's talk video sharing. There are 3 video sharing trends, and none of these will be surprising to any of you. You can share videos privately, you can share them publicly, and you can share them instantly. That instant is the latest trend in all of this presentation. You didn't used to be able to share video or audio instantly. Now you can, depending on the size of it. First app we're going to talk about for video sharing, we've already mentioned, is Snapchat. As we said, it's supposed to go away. Content is supposed to go away after 24 hours, quicker if it's person to person. When you take a video or an image and share it through Snapchat, you have even more filters than you do on Instagram. And the interesting thing that Snapchat has developed is a way to apply photographic filters to videos. So you can change how a video looks in just a few clicks. You can make an entire video sepia-toned in Snapchat in about 4 clicks. I don't understand that technology. I know people who work on it. In fact, I'm a good friend with their director of engineering. He's tried to explain it to me. I'm fairly technical. I still don't understand it. You can annotate your videos and your images on Snapchat, meaning you can add text over top of them, either over the whole video or over chunks of the video. They have 100 million daily users. Do you have a question? Yeah, I thought I saw your hand. Okay. They have 100 million daily users, and they are growing fast. Like I said earlier, they've doubled their engineering, doubled their staff this year. Their engineering offices, by the way, are in Santa Monica. And if you ever want to go tour them, send them a Snapchat. Their community service people and their social media people love to show off their offices. That's another opportunity, too. This last note here on Snapchat just blew my mind when I found it this morning. 8.796 photos are shared per second on Snapchat. No, that's how many are going on the platform. Who's interested in all of them? Nobody. But your daughters and sons and grandkids are. The other people who are on the trip are. Your friends are. And because Snapchat doesn't keep things forever, if you share it via Snapchat, it's up there and it's gone. No, it goes to your mobile phone or to the web. I don't understand your question. Whichever way you're connected to the internet, are you connected wirelessly, or are you connected via the cell tower? Yeah, same with all of this. No, 8.796 photos, 9 photos per second for an app. Well, but it's an app that's less than 2 years old. Okay, how many seconds in a day? Multiply that times 9. Almost a factor of 10. That's not as small as it looks. Well, I would have, but I was copying somebody else's data statement. So the next thing we're going to look at is Vine. Vine is video, 6-second loops. I will stand up here and tell you I do not understand why someone uses Vine. It's owned by Twitter, and the only thing you can share with it is 6-second videos. Yeah, it's the right amount of time to see somebody fall. It's not enough to share any information. It's not enough to do much more than make somebody laugh if you're lucky. But, that said, they are also very new, and they have 200 million active users per month. And that's not users, that's active users. Playing is across everybody who's looking at the videos, 1.5 billion loops played daily. Because anybody who has a Twitter account can easily have a Vine account. Yeah, that's kind of how I look at it, too. Anybody want to know what NBT stands for? The next big thing. Meerkat is the next big thing. They developed a way to share video instantly and store it at the same time. So if I take a video with my phone using Meerkat, I can share it up to the web and to anybody else, but it doesn't disappear in 24 hours. It's there, and it's able to be seen. Because they're longer videos, they are more useful. They have 156,000 users. Yes, that's low. Meerkat is less than a year old, and Meerkat had a problem. Note on the bottom. In May of 2015, Twitter called the owner and founder of Meerkat and said, you don't have access to our API anymore. You can't share your stuff via Twitter. So without Twitter, they have gained this much traction in a year. They have gotten 283,000 views of the videos. And this data is actually from earlier this summer, so I'm sure it's much larger by now. So why should you care? That second bullet is the biggest one. Politicians are realizing social is the way to go. They can reach out to more people without having to spend the resources. And all of the political people decided early this year that Meerkat was how they wanted to share things. And when Twitter took away the API, all the political people said, that's fine. We can share them via Twitter by hand. We still want to use Meerkat. The biggest population of followers, the person on Meerkat who has the biggest amount of followers, is Obama. The next biggest change is pretty much daily, but it's one of the Republican candidates. I would guess after tonight we will start seeing more from the Democrats on Meerkat. And it's a good way for you to get real information. Because it's kind of easy to lie in front of a stage video. But if it's a video that's being recorded and shared right away, isn't it a lot easier to tell if the person's lying or not? Especially if they go over a minute, and any politician who talks at a time. Sorry. I have not talked about YouTube. That's because YouTube does not publish data anymore. They used to every year publish how many videos, how many minutes of videos have been updated every day, all kinds of stats. Starting about a year, year and a half ago, they stopped publishing that data. Most recent data I could find was from early 2014. So I found a special thing for you. How many of you like old movies? Paramount now has a YouTube channel. It's easy, that's the direct link, but if you go to YouTube and search for Paramount, you'll find their channel. The cool thing about Paramount's YouTube channel is starting 3 weeks ago, they started populating their channel with old movies. Full old movies. As well as pieces of old movies. So you've got pieces to watch or you've got full videos. And I challenge you all to go look, because there's some funny stuff up there. No. Seriously, because the numbers I saw from last summer were 2 and 3 times the number the summer before. And I don't know if that rate has grown, and I am not good at guessing numbers off the top of my head. I can tell you how to find it. If you search YouTube subscribers, you can find that information. But please realize that there are a lot of us who believe the reason YouTube stopped putting out that information is because if you have a Google account now, you have a YouTube account. So if you find out how many people have Google accounts, you've probably found out how many people have YouTube accounts. What? But not how many are using it. I could not find anywhere today or yesterday how many people were posting how much to YouTube. I'm guessing it's like 3 times at least the numbers up there for Facebook, but I don't know. Yep. So the other thing I was going to talk about was hashtags. Just to tell you, a hashtag isn't owned by anyone. A hashtag is whatever you want as long as you start it with a pound sign and it stops when there's a space. As I said, I will be putting this material up on SlideShare tomorrow morning. If you want to reach me anytime, you can send me a note on Twitter. You can connect with me on Facebook. You can connect with me on Instagram or just about anywhere else by going to the profile for Call Kathy. If you want these materials, you can go up to SlideShare tomorrow later in the day and look for the SlideShare.com profile for Call Kathy. If you want to email me at what do you suppose the first half of it is? Call Kathy. Actually, it doesn't matter what you put in front of the at sign because I have a husband who has my own mail server for me. The at part is vitaminch.com. VitaminCH.com. Vitamin CH is that subject, that substance without which I would not have made it through the day. And that's chocolate. I thank you all for your time. I hope you enjoyed it. Please fill in evals.